Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Radzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Josh Rapoon, Global Community Director for What School Could Be and host of the What School Could Be podcast. What School Could Be is lots of things. It's a community of educators, it's a resource for those educators, and it's a network of people who believe that the true purpose of school is to prepare young people to lead fulfilling lives in the time of those changes that Greg just mentioned. We're so happy to have him here. Josh Rapoon, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you so much. I am super stoked to be with you today. And that was a really accurate description of what school could be and what we do. And I'll also mention that my mother was from Pittsburgh. So this is actually a pretty cool moment for me to be on with you guys today.
Everybody in Hawaii is dying to get to Pittsburgh. You're not the first, Josh.
Especially here in February. Yes, absolutely.
Josh, all roads lead to Pittsburgh. And the sooner the universe realizes this.
Yeah, that's right.
So our listeners probably know the name of your organization is also the name of a book by Ted Dintersmith, who was a past guest on the Remaking Tomorrow podcast. And that book, of course, is What School Could Be: Insights and Inspiration from Teachers Across America. But let's imagine we've never heard of What School Could Be. How would you explain it to us? And what's its relation to the book?
Well, I'll give you the 30th floor, 60-second elevator pitch here. Everything that What School Could Be is goes back to January 25th, 2015, with the Sundance debut of Ted Dintersmith's acclaimed film, Most Likely to Succeed, which we just celebrated back here in January 25th of 2025. We had a wonderful YouTube live event where we had Ted and Greg Whiteley, the director, on together, and they spun a bunch of stories about what it took to actually make that film at High Tech High. Some people know that after the film debuted and Ted had a team that was moving Most Likely to Succeed across the country in a community screening model, he went on a 50-state tour that lasted for an entire year. He ended that tour here in Hawaii, and that's how I got to know him and began working with him. Subsequent to that, he wrote his book, What School Could Be, which is a love letter to all 50 states and the nooks and crannies where he found innovation and creativity and imagination. And then subsequent to that was the development of something that we call the Innovation Playlist, which is a pretty vast library of video resources for educators. And then the development of What School Could Be and whatschoolcouldbe.org. And a few years ago, as you mentioned, the launch of the What School Could Be global online community, which has about 5,000 members now, quite active, and is really kind of the heart and soul of what we do.
And Josh, before you became the global community director, you had lots of different job titles. You were a history teacher, you were an ed tech consultant, you were even a chef and a hotel manager, is that correct?
Yeah, it actually goes all the way back to the 1970s and 1980s. My first career out of high school was as a chef. I went through the California Culinary Academy in San Francisco, did the chefing thing for about 10 years, started to realize, Brian, that I was feeling a little bit too isolated in these kitchens and I needed to break out of my introverted nature. And so I stepped into hotel management and boy, did that put me in front of a lot of people really quickly. And then I went to University of Iowa to finish up my undergrad degree that I had started much earlier. Got a degree in history, came back to Hawaii, taught for 17 years in three different independent schools here in Hawaii. And then and that also, by the way, included that 7 years of ed tech work and really kind of being on the front end of Apple's development in classrooms, all of Apple technologies, hardware, software. I wanted to be involved in education, but I needed to have a job. So I started working for Apple, worked for Apple as a salesperson for 10 years. But along the way, actually within the first year of starting to work at Apple is when I saw Most Likely to Succeed. And it absolutely changed the arc of my life because I realized that I could be involved in education. And the way to do that was to screen the film and to build conversations around the film. And the rest is history.
And Josh, among other things, you're the host of the What School Could Be podcast, where you give spotlight to educators, and I'm going to quote you all here about the podcast, so that their stories of innovation, creativity, and imagination might inspire others towards student-driven and relevant learning. Now that last phrase, student-driven learning, student-centered learning, is something that Ryan and I and you see all around. And if you're in the field of education, sometimes you have a handle of what that means. If you're outside of the field of education, you sometimes wonder, what exactly is that? What does that look like? So can you give a sense as to what you mean when you think about student-driven and relevant learning? And maybe does it cause you to think about some of your own podcast guests and individuals who are pursuing that spirit that you have about it?
So I'm going to take us to Kansas City, where I was last September. I did an episode with Sarah Renfro, who at the time was recommended to me by Bill Nicely, who's somebody I got to know at the Kauffman Foundation. Getting to know Bill was sort of a coincidence. He happened to be in Hawaii, and Tom Vander Ark asked me to connect with him, and I did, and we became thick as thieves pretty quick. When Bill recommended Sarah Renfro for my show, my deep dive into her life and her work and what was happening in Kansas City just absolutely blew my mind. And so subsequent to the release of that episode, Bill actually invited me to come to Kansas City last September to be part of the Real World Learning Initiative conference, which was organized by Kauffman and by Getting Smart, which, by the way, I just want to do a shout out to gettingsmart.com, all the folks at Getting Smart, Tom Vander Ark and Mason, because they are very much like us, and they are spotlighting where innovation and creativity is happening around the country and around the world. All across Kansas City, you have schools that are connecting with businesses and creating real-world opportunities for kids to do what are called client-connected projects, and to develop what's called, I think, market value assets. So those are fancy words, but what they really mean is, if I'm a kid in high school, let's say I'm in the 10th grade at a particular school in Kansas City, I will have the opportunity to do an internship or an apprenticeship or some sort of real-world learning experience at a business, and I'm surrounded on both sides, on the business side and on the school side, with coaches and mentors and guides and advisors and sponsors. And as I go through that experience, well before I even think about going to college, I am already immersed in the real world. Right now, Kansas City is the shining example, at least in my world, of where this is happening. But what we've noticed here at What School Could Be is that we are seeing plumes of lights like Anaheim, Tacoma, Pittsburgh, Maine, New York, Missouri, Kansas. It's all over the place. You are seeing people really coming together. And what they're focused on is even moving beyond student-driven learning to real-world learning.
Josh, I love that, you know, Greg asked you that question and you said right away, I'm going to take you to Kansas City and then Anaheim and then Tacoma, Pittsburgh, and so on. You know, you are the global community director. And one of the things I've always appreciated about What School Could Be is that sort of globetrotting sensibility. But I mean, it also can't be easy, right? How do you connect educators working across so many different contexts, across countries, across cultures? You know, what is it about What School Could Be that brings them all together? And how do you do some of that work of spotlighting those plumes?
So I'm going to give you a two-part answer to that awesome question. We do a lot of events at What School Could Be. And if you want to know what those events are, just go to whatschoolcouldbe.org/events, and they're all listed right there. In the past, they used to be only available for members of our global online community who are educators. But a couple of years ago, we actually opened up our events to anybody who wants to come. So one of the series that we do is called Eye on Student Protagonism. And the idea is students need to be protagonists in their own lives. They need to direct their learning. They need to move forward with purpose. They need to find their pathways and their place in the world and what contribution they're going to make to their communities that surround them. These are kids that we round up from particular locations. Like, for example, the last one we did was Liger Leadership Academy in Cambodia. And the one before that was students from the Green School in Bali. And these kids, in a sort of virtual fishbowl, present the projects that they're working on. And then the adults just blow up the chat, and then we have discussion, we have Q&A. And I think the answer to your question is that those are the moments that create the most energy. That's the way to really get educators who are under this big tent of reimagining and remaking learning to really get fired up, is to have them listening to the kids. But I also acknowledge, which is part of your question, that doing this globally is difficult because we've got multiple time zones that we're trying to navigate. So we're always in a bit of a crunch here at What School Could Be, because something that's happening at 1 p.m. Hawaii time is actually already 7 or 8 p.m. on the East Coast, or 23 hours ahead in a totally different day in Cambodia. So it's not easy to do that. But what we found is that people are gracious and they're respectful. And we just try to create as many time zone possibilities as we can. And then people dial in, and every single one of those events, most especially the ION student protagonism, just gets people really fired up and they keep coming back, which is very, very gratifying.
This is Greg Baer here with Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Josh Rapoon, the global community director for What School Could Be and host of the What School Could Be podcast. Josh, you were born and raised on the island of Oahu in Hawaii, and you still live there today, and you have developed a mantra that I will allow you to pronounce that means through doing one learns. So yes. Before you pronounce this mantra for us, where did it come from and how does it inform what it is that you do?
So the phrase, which I treat as a mantra, is makahana kaike. In doing, one learns. Makahana kaike. And who knows, you know, how old the phrase is, but it comes really from ancient Hawaii, from the ancient Hawaiians. If you look at one of the most remarkable education programs ever conceived, it is the Polynesian Voyaging Society and the epic, almost Homeric adventures of the voyaging canoe Hokulea, which was a recreation of an ancient Hawaiian voyaging canoe. And the purpose behind creating that voyaging canoe was to disprove Thor Heyerdahl's sort of colonial notion that the Hawaiians arrived in Hawaii by accident, by floating across the sea from Chile or from South America. The idea that we have to go back in order to go forward. If we want to reimagine and remake learning, we have to look back to ancient cultures, to indigenous cultures that treated learning as just a process of doing. Like, I learned how to build rock walls in our property on Oahu because my dad and I built rock walls. I learned how to clean a reef of invasive algae, not by sitting in a marine biology classroom at my high school, but by actually going out and cleaning a reef of invasive algae. Makahana kaike, in doing one learns. So I think I'm consciously and subconsciously always on the lookout for guests who kind of embody that idea. And I'll just share with you a quick funny story. I did an episode with John Hattie and his colleague, Tony Frontier, and that came out in January. John Hattie sort of had some issues with makahana kaike, and I felt like I was being attacked almost in that moment. But basically, it still comes back to the idea of expert teaching. And the reason why my dad was able to expertly teach me to build rock walls is because he was an expert teacher. So when you put the phrase and the doing together and the really expert teaching together, then you've got something that's really special. And I think that kids love to be in and love to learn.
I love hearing you talk about this, Josh, because we can hear you just light up as you talk about this idea of makahana kaike. And, you know, if I'm an educator, I would imagine feeling the same way. And I'm wondering, if I'm a teacher who wants to make my classroom more like this, or wants to bring more of this style of learning into my practice wherever I am, what is the front door, so to speak, to What School Could Be? And what might I find as an educator once I step inside?
Start to imagine what you can do outside your classroom. How can the hallway, for example, become like a marketplace? Couldn't you have a Friday morning marketplace, invite the community into, you know, be part of this sort of community market or farmers market or whatever it is? So if that makes sense, it's like all you have to do is step out of the box, step out of your classroom and begin to look around you. If you do that in your hallway, then you're going to be looking at the stairwells, and then you're going to be looking at the cafeteria. And then the next thing you know, you're going to be outside the building and you're going to look around and go, oh my, there's makahana kaike everywhere. There's community everywhere. You can learn from your community. And I think that's what you two have been talking about since When You Wonder, You're Learning, which is the ways the community can actually be part of the education process. So I think to those educators who are listening, just step outside the classroom and just imagine for a moment, to use Kate Robinson, who's Sir Ken Robinson's daughter, to use the title of the book that they wrote together and she finished, imagine if you step outside your classroom, what could happen out there that would represent a step forward in remaking learning?
Josh, I agree with Ryan. Your light just comes through your words. We can hear it. And these are times when for some people, it's hard to have and hold hope. I mean, these are difficult times technologically, socially, environmentally, politically. And that's probably been true of any day in any month in any year for times in memoriam. So can you talk about the fierce urgency of now and how you hold hope for what's possible if we imagine if?
Wow, that's a small question.
In the next 17 seconds, Josh.
In the next 17 seconds, yes. I'm going to come right back to Rhode Island and to Brian Byerly, who was one of the two principals that I interviewed earlier. In my research for these Spotlight On pages, and as I was preparing for the Rhode Island interview, I discovered that Rhode Island's state seal and its flag has one word as its motto, and that word is hope. And so the first question that I, right out of the gate, that I asked Brian was, is there a relationship between building relationships and hope? In other words, doesn't hope come from building relationships? And he loved that question and he just went off on it. And it was really, really neat to experience how we had connected these two concepts together. And so to answer your question, the fierce urgency of now, which is something that we're just like really after here at What School Could Be, of course, it has everything to do with AI. It has everything to do with the mental health crisis that we're experiencing in this country. But really, when it comes down to it, in this moment, with the way that the country is right now, this fierce urgency of now has everything to do with relationships and building hope. So if we're going to have hope, we have to build relationships. And again, I go back to that seminal moment when I read When You Wonder, You're Learning. That was the thing that really got me about that book, was just the idea of building those relationships and the kind of hope that you begin to feel. And hey, I want to eat, sleep, and breathe and drink hope. Why not? What's the alternative is to, you know, to deal with despair and with doom. Not going to do it. So What School Could Be is in the business of optimism, but we're trying not to be naive. And we do understand that this fierce urgency of now is, we just really have to put that message out there that it's for our kids and we need to move forward really quickly.
Josh, speaking of fierce urgency, we are going to do a little bit of a lightning round. So we're going to ask you some pretty rapid fire questions. You just let us know what the first thing is that comes to mind and we'll go from there. You ready?
I'm ready.
So you are a former chef. You still love to cook. Yeah. What is the best dish you've made in the past month?
So I will share with you that I am an aficionado of using the Moroccan cooking pot known as the tagine. And the coolest thing about the tagine, which looks like a conical top to it, and all of the moisture rises and then comes back down again. The awesome thing about the tagine is you can throw anything in it, anything, and it'll turn out beautiful. So you go into the refrigerator, you look at what's there, you huck a bunch of stuff in the tagine. I did something like that with some chicken and olives and onions and garlic, and wow, served it over rice. It was fabulous. And if that makes your listeners hungry, good, I'm glad.
So you have taught lots of different courses over the course of your teaching days, from AP US History to Hawaiian Studies. What was your favorite course to teach?
I actually think that it was an economics course, and I'll just be very brief and share that I was thrown into this course. I looked at the curriculum, the syllabus, and said, this is the most boring thing I've ever seen. They call it the dismal science for a reason. So I threw it out and I created a course in which there was a series of layered hypotheticals, simulations, if you will. I transformed my kids into legislators and city council members and members of finance boards. And I threw hypothetical after hypothetical at them. And oh my, that year was so fabulous. And I think the end result of it was, you know, if we want our kids to make decisions, we got to ask them to make decisions. And I asked them to make a lot of decisions. So that was an amazing course and absolutely my favorite of everything I've ever taught.
And you were the tagine. Throw everything through Josh, comes out beautiful and delicious.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, that's great.
You also worked at an Apple store. So you've fixed a lot of problems over the course of your career there. What's the most difficult technological problem you've ever solved?
Well, I was not a genius. I wasn't a technical specialist. I was a salesperson. But I'll tell you what, the salespeople in the front of the store generally have to deal with iCloud problems. And the most wicked problem of all was your Apple ID password. And I'm off the clock, so I'm not helping anybody in this moment, not you two, none of your listeners. But I have to tell you that I became quite skilled at fixing that problem. And also because I was a, quote, older guy on the floor, all of the senior citizens of Honolulu would flock to me in my Apple store and look to fix their Apple ID password issues. So, yep, that was the hardest problem to solve.
Josh, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
So this is really cool that you ask this, because I was thinking that for parents, parents need to engage their kids in the learning process, and not as helicopter parents, and not as driving them towards college or any particular pathway, but as guides and mentors and sponsors and coaches alongside their kids. So instead of parents asking your kids, how was school today? Ask them something like, in what ways did you contribute to your school community today? Those kinds of questions. As parents, really engage their kids as sort of walking alongside them instead of hovering over them. Some of the best stories that we see at What School Could Be are these parents that are walking alongside their kids. And my goodness, we go right back to Most Likely to Succeed in the relationship between the protagonist, Samantha, and her mother, Lorena. Like, that's the thing right there, is like, be with your kid and learn along with them. Be makahana ka'ike with your kid. That's the secret sauce, I think.
Thank you so much to Josh Rapoon, Global Community Director for What School Could Be, and host of the What School Could Be podcast. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.